great to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's all about you and that wallet of yours. I want you to learn ideas from me so you can save more and spend less, and don't let anyone ever rip you off. Coming up in just a few minutes in today's Clarkrageous Moment, sometimes you just need a good night's sleep, Elon Musk. And coming up later, the home market has been tough for first-time homebuyers, and something that looked like it was never going to come back again is, and that's ultra-low down payment mortgages. A friend of mine recently found out that his wife had won $25 million. And I was just so curious about what it's like to suddenly go from earning a regular paycheck to having $25 million fall out of the sky. And so David Lazarus is with us right now, who is a columnist with the LA Times. And I just want to know, are you going to keep working now that you have this $25 million windfall?
Well, I'm talking to you from the veranda of my new house in Tahiti, so that tells you everything you need to know.
So how did you fall into $25 million?
Yeah, and let's be a spoiler alert, this isn't real, it's a scam.
Oh, come on! Why'd you give it away so fast?
It just broke my heart to have the audience thinking that David Lazarus is now on Tahiti, when, in fact, no. I'm in Los Angeles, right across the street from Los Angeles International Airport, thank you very much. But this is a really interesting glimpse at something undoubtedly you and your listeners are already familiar with, and that's called the advanced fee scam, where some incredible opportunity or some huge financial windfall is offered to you, but lo and behold, you have to pay some money up front to make it happen. In fact, according to the FBI, the advanced fee scheme results in about $58 million in losses every year. So it's a very effective scam. And in my case, we got a snail mail letter at home addressed to my wife saying that some guy named Matsu Lazarus had passed away and a $25 million account had been found at his bank in England, and they wanted to declare my wife the next of kin so she could inherit it. And I thought, what the heck? Why don't I go as far down this rabbit hole as I could and see just how this scam plays out? And that's what I did in this case.
Well, weren't you surprised that a family member was named Matsu?
Well, there's that part of it, too. And then the other part is Lazarus is my wife's married name, so there's no way she's an ex-kin of anybody with this surname. But once you get past that, you realize that this is great and is an awesome opportunity for me, because how often do I get offered $25 million?
So how did it emerge? So you get the letter in the mail. You say, hey, is there anything that could be better for a consumer reporter than to have this fall into your own lap?
You know, I've done this in the past with just kind of pursuing things just to see how they play out, but I have never, Clark, seen a scam this involved and this elaborate. And that's what is so fascinating here, is once I started letting it play out, it just went on and on. And I know how the advance fee scheme works, and so I just assumed that as soon as I responded to the guy, he'd come back at me and spring the trap and say, you send us X amount of money to cover the taxes, and we're good on this. But that's not what happened. What happened, and this is a pretty shaggy dog story, so I'm going to abbreviate it a little bit, but what happened is, as soon as I expressed interest in this and allowed myself to be hooked by the scam, they just took their time rolling it out. First, I talked to a guy who was purporting to be a lawyer in London. He didn't have a British accent. If I had to say, I would say it was African sounding. And then that led me to a guy who purportedly was a diplomat in England who would be able to move the $25 million in cash, hence it couldn't be wired, over to America in a diplomatic pouch, and it must be like a diplomatic pouch the size of a Mack truck if it's all in cash. And that then led to another person, again with an African-sounding accent, who was going to be the diplomat's agent in Atlanta, where the cash was going to arrive, who was going to get the money out of a bonded warehouse. So I'm talking to three different people, and meantime, they're sending me all of these documents, obviously photoshopped, but nevertheless, documents, the death certificate for poor Matsu Lazarus, legal papers and court certificates saying that my wife was now being declared the next of kin, probate documents, bank documents. It just went on and on, week after week. And I'm talking to these guys every day, and I'm sitting there thinking, as this thing plays out, yeah, I see how people can get hooked by this, because once you invest yourself in something this elaborate, once you become a party to something this extreme, you're going to kind of suspend your disbelief for a bit and think, yeah, there must be something to it.
So when did the hook finally come with them wanting money?
It took about 3 weeks for them to finally reach the point where they were ready to spring it. And by this time, the cash, quote-unquote, had arrived in America. It was in Atlanta. It was in the bonded warehouse. So was the diplomat from the Caribbean island of St. Lucia, which is a real island. However, he said on the phone that it was in British Samoa. Hello, there isn't a British Samoa. Good tip for people, by the way. Check this stuff out when they give you these kind of facts, because oftentimes the scammers are getting it wrong. And at this point, when it was finally in the bonded warehouse, the agent of the Chancellery of St. Lucia says to me, okay, look, we got the $25 million. It's here. It's sitting on like a Costco pallet. It's ready to go. What you need to do is wire us $18,000 plus a little extra, and that will allow us to move it out. And there it is. There's the scam being popped right there, but I was curious to know how flexible they were, and so I then turned around and said, oh gosh, that's a lot of money, $18,000. Can we do it for less? And not surprisingly, they came back and said, okay, fine, we can do that for $12,000. And I pushed a little harder and said, yeah, that's still a lot of money, and since I'm about to get $25 million, I can pay on the back end, so it's not going to be a problem. And that got them down to a little over $6,000. And remember, this is all gravy for them. This is just three guys talking on the phone and sending me Photoshop documents, so whatever they get is good. And I finally got them down to about $6,000 and said, yeah, I can work with that. And suddenly we're in business, and they're sending me the routing numbers and the bank account info I need to wire it to them. And that's when I finally thought, okay, this has gone far enough. And the next time I got one of them on the phone, I said, dude, let's talk. You've obviously been yanking me around. I've been yanking you around. I'm not paying. This is obviously a scam. Tell me how often people fall for this. And there's a long pause, and then the guy says, well, this is not a scam. I don't know what you mean. Of course it's a scam. Another long pause, and the guy says, well, are we doing this or not? I said, no, we're not doing this. Click. And that's the last I heard from them.
Okay, that is such a great story. So you could have been scammed at a discount. I mean, you talked it down to two-thirds off.
Well, don't let it be said that I'm not good at my job. I mean, I'm not going to pay full retail price for this stuff. But nevertheless, it's fascinating that there is this element of flexibility. And moreover, every time I threw an obstacle in their path, they had an answer for it. And I thought that's something else that people need to be alert to, is they're very flexible on this. You tell them you don't have enough money, they're going to talk to their supervisor, they're going to work something out. You ask them to wire the money, no, we can't do that, it's in cash. It's interesting that they're anticipating virtually everything that could be getting in the way of making this thing work. And I've talked to a lot of scammers who stick to a script, but these guys were ad-libbing, more or less, but they did have answers for everything. And that's something that people, especially seniors who often get caught up in these financial shenanigans, need to be alert to, is they're coming off as your friend, they're responding to your legitimate concerns, and it just draws you deeper and deeper into their world.
And, you know, just as you said, joking up front, that you were talking to me from Tahiti, that's exactly what people do in their heads. They start imagining, wow, I'm going to be on my yacht. I'm going to be, all my money troubles are over. Whatever it is, they get caught in their own fantasy, and they just want to believe at that point. And you help so many people by playing this string out and writing about it. Now you've helped so many millions more sharing this on the air, and I appreciate that so much.
Oh, it's a great pleasure. Thanks very much.
So I have one question for you.
Yeah.
If you really had gotten $25 million, would you go to work tomorrow?
Yeah, I would. That's because I'm the kind of guy who really, really loves his job. But that said, boy, would I not worry about downsizing of the newspaper industry.
Yeah, you're versatile. You're going to be fine. I mean, they sell the last newspaper ever. You'll still figure it out. I'm not worried about you.
Well, thank you.
Thanks. Best to you. And that's David Lazarus of the Los Angeles Times, who is their consumer reporter extraordinaire, who loves to follow the string fully out and give you the play-by-play about the best ways to protect yourself. And Joel, do we have time for an Ask Clark here?
Yeah, Clark, we sure do. Marilyn wrote in and she said, Clark, if I'm buying a new vehicle, is it best for me to put down a big chunk of money like $10,000 on a $23,000 vehicle? And if so, do I then still get gap insurance on that vehicle?
You'd never need gap insurance in that case. If you put down a huge down payment, which is always a good idea, if you have the money and it's not going to pinch you to use that money for the purchase of the vehicle, then going ahead and putting the big down payment, do it. And then you're in a position to take on a shorter loan term as well. You know, credit unions will write even 2-year car loans. You can take out an ultra short car loan, not go for a typical car loan of 5 to 6 years. And you'd always owe so much less than what the vehicle's worth that you'd have no need for gap insurance.
All right, Clark. And Gene, speaking of cars, says, I know from listening to you that you're against most extended warranties, but what about getting an extended warranty on a new car with a bunch of electronic devices?
Well, that is a pitch that you'll hear at the car dealership now. And they'll throw out wild figures that they've been trained to throw out. And they'll say, well, you know, just think about all the electronics in this automobile and replacing this one blah, blah, blah costs $2,600. And that's more than what this extended warranty would cost you. So just one simple repair, you would make up the cost of the warranty. Okay, so that's the pitch. The thing is that if you're buying a new vehicle, the time to buy an extension of that warranty is before the manufacturer's warranty runs out, not when you buy the vehicle. Because you'll know you can buy one from the manufacturer up to the point that the original manufacturer's warranty runs out. You'll know how the vehicle's been performing, how reliable it's been, how much you like the vehicle, how likely you are to keep that vehicle. And so that's the right time for you to buy that extension of a warranty, if you buy one at all. If a vehicle's ultimately extremely reliable, let's say based on Consumer Reports data and based on your own experience in the first few years of owning it, then likely you're better off not spending any money on that extension of a warranty. And remember this rule, never, 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 not ever buy a third-party warranty on a new vehicle. If you're going to buy an extension of a warranty, the only one to ever even remotely consider is the manufacturer's own. I could talk for days about the horrific stories I've covered in TV of people who bought those third-party warranties and ended up with a big fat nothing when something went wrong with their vehicle.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
One of the great success stories in capitalism in the United States in recent years has been the things that Elon Musk has done. it's just amazing what he's done in satellite launches, saving the taxpayers of this country billions of dollars by providing a much more efficient way to do satellite launches, creating the electric vehicle revolution that is going to take the world by storm, and coming up with new ways to make energy grids more reliable in the world with battery backup systems. I mean, it's amazing what this guy's done. But in the midst of it all, he's melting down, and that's the subject of today's Clarkrageous Moment.
Scams, rip-offs, outrages. It's a Clarkrageous Moment.
So Elon Musk is the rare corporate executive that people actually know his name. Most corporate executives go through life with pretty much anonymity, except within the four walls of the corporation that he or she runs. And Elon Musk, on the other hand, is that rare individual in the corporate suite who just craves being famous. And at the same time, he is a workaholic and a brilliant mind. But that workaholic thing is causing a complete meltdown. You know, I told you recently on the show how much better people perform in the workplace if they have downtime, chill time. This is a guy who doesn't even see his kids. He's got like five of them. And he's working somewhere over 100 hours a week, every week. Now think about that. That's 14 hours a day or more, 7 days a week, virtually every day of the year. And no wonder he's melting down. No wonder no managers stay with him. And this isn't really about Elon Musk. This is about you and me. Are you burning up your energy? Are you burning up your sanity by not taking downtime, by not taking your vacation, by not taking time for those that love you, for your family, for your friends? You know, people like Elon Musk are great examples in ingenuity and creativity and inventiveness, but they're also a great example about balance in life. And so I ask you, do you have balance in your life? Are you being good to yourself? And in turn, by being good to yourself, being a better employee, a better friend, a better person? What's old becomes new again. It's my pleasure to have you here on the Clark Howard Show, where it's about you learning ways to keep more of what you make. So we got this big problem in America with housing affordability and first-time homebuyers saying that in any way we're ever going to be able to come up with massive down payment money. After the housing bust last decade following the banking scandals, the mortgage market went back to very strict standards that used to exist two generations ago. And that was when, for most home loans, you had to have a 20% down payment. But that was when the average cost of a home in the United States costs less than an entry-level Lexus costs today. Today, with the cost of an average home, asking someone to come up with a 20% down payment, we're talking maybe $50,000 in down payment money. It's a bridge too far. At the same time, there's been so much fear that if money became too easy, that we would end up in a situation like we had last decade. But there are such significant differences with the new 3% down programs that I'm not freaking out. If you're not aware, the greatest cause of the meltdown last decade, and the reason they're called the banking scandals, is banks had incentives in the marketplace to push out loans and sell them off to unsuspecting investors, whether the paper they were writing was good or not. The banks were writing 0% loans with no proof of income, and you could buy as many houses as you wanted back then as a quote-unquote investor. And so that's what led to the meltdown is the scandalous, dirty, rotten, terrible, crooked behavior of the banks not having somebody have an opportunity to buy a home with a very low down payment. There are lots of rules that go along with taking out a 3% loan from who already was offering one, the FHA, and now there are new programs tilted heavily towards first-time home buyers and more modest price homes from Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And so if you are someone who's been struggling to save that money, but you've made it, you really need to be past 4% because of the costs that are involved in closing on a home, even if it has a 3% down payment. But you now may well qualify for one of these 3% down payment loans, and they allow credit scores far lower than what lenders have been requiring in recent years. Now, a lender does not necessarily have to participate with these lower credit score, low down payment loans, but there will be plenty that will, and the credit scores that will make you eligible. I think back to early this decade when to get a loan, even with a significant down payment, you had to have a credit score of 720 or above. And now we're talking about credit scores in the range typically of around 620 to 640 for you to qualify for these 3% down payment loans. So I've got info for you at clark.com on how these programs work and who qualifies as now the availability of financing with a decent interest rate and less money in the game, what they call skin in the game, is now available yet again. Gus is with us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, Gus.
Hey, how you doing, Clark?
Great, thank you, Gus. Great having you here.
Thanks for having me.
Gus, how can I serve you?
I got a question about the real estate market right now. I've been sitting on an investment condo for a while. Not making any money on it, but it is kind of paying for itself. But, you know, it's cost me money here and there on repairs. Trying to see if it's a buyer's market, a seller's market, trying to figure out what I should do.
So it's really a price point question where houses become a buyer's market, neutral, or a seller's market. So generally, at the lowest price points based on local conditions, houses are an extreme seller's market. So people are having trouble finding that first home they can afford. And there's a severe shortage of homes at the entry-level point. So if this condo you have is at the lower pricing range of the real estate market where you own it, then you're almost certainly in a seller's market where you would find the market very interested in buying your property. On the other hand, if it's more at the higher end of the market, the higher end is overstocked now in most of the country, and it would be a classic buyer's market. And then kind of in between is where it's at equilibrium.
Okay.
So where will you put your condo?
That I own. Say again?
You said this is a condo, right?
Yes, yes.
So where would you put the price point?
I own right now, yep, though, and would like to possibly rent out my house or sell it and move into the condo.
Ah, all right. So where does your house fit in the price points?
I think my house is sitting pretty good right now. So it's I'm thinking about selling it and moving into the condo.
Well, I mean, that's a lifestyle choice. If you really like the condo, you haven't really had a lot of fun renting it out, then that's something people do frequently where they have a home and an investment property, is they may decide to flip and move into the investment property. The advantage to you with your own home, has it appreciated a lot in value?
Yes.
So if you sell it, that's an advantage because you get to pocket as a single individual $250,000 tax-free, a married couple $500,000 in gain tax-free. If you hold on to that and convert it into a rental property, eventually you lose that. So if you wanted to flip and move into the rental property, if there's been a big gain on that house you're in, I would sell it.
And now's the time to sell, huh?
Well, again, if it's at the more modest pricing point of your area, that's where homes are still selling very well.
Okay. I think it is that in that area, so I'm going to have to think about selling, I think. I appreciate your time. Thanks for answering my question.
Sure, and best to you with what you end up doing. And James joins us on the Clark Howard Show. Hi, James.
Hello. I'm 14. I've got $2,500 in the bank. And
What? You're 14 and you already have $2,500. How'd you do that?
I'm just collecting money from Christmas and birthdays and just putting in a little bit. I'm in the bank at a time.
So you, when you have received money as a gift at holiday periods and for your birthday,
yes.
You don't spend it, you save it?
I spend a little bit of it, but most times I don't really have anything worthwhile to buy, so.
Well, I'd like for you to meet my 13-year-old son and teach him whatever it is you know, because he, by his own admission, is a spender. And I'd love it if you could re-educate him to do what you've done, which is to save money. So let's talk, James. The money you have, this $2,500, what do you hope for it to be to you someday? What do you hope to use it for?
Well, right now I have it in a credit union bank, which is pretty much giving me about $2 a year interest.
Right.
So I was thinking about trying to put in maybe some mutual funds or CDs and trying to get a little bit more money.
And what do you hope, at what point do you want to use the money? Are you going to use it to buy a car when you turn 16? Are you saving it for maybe going to college? Like, what's the purpose of the money in your life someday?
Well, I'm fine with not touching it until, like, after college, but I would maybe use a little bit that I might get in the future to probably pay for a car or...
All right. The reason I ask that is that you would do very well putting money into a fund and letting it grow in a fund. And there are a variety of them that I like where you can put money in. You mentioned a mutual fund.
Yeah.
I like for you to look at something known as an index fund. Because an index fund, because it's not traded a lot, you can have it in an account and you don't have to worry about a lot of it being taxed while you have it in there.
Yeah, I'm just looking for a low fee way to just gradually make some money.
Well, this is great. Now, one idea I've talked about in the past, have you ever heard of a company called Fidelity Investments?
I have. I don't know much about them, but I know
it generally. So Fidelity has an account with zero minimums and zero fees. And you can put your money into a fund that owns little tiny pieces of most U.S. companies. And you'd own, I guess, stock in like 3,000 U.S. companies. And then they have another one with zero fees and zero minimums that puts money in international fund choices. And you could go into a Fidelity office. You'll need someone who's an adult to go with you because they have to be what's known as custodian of it. Well, you probably have a custodian arrangement on that credit union account, and you just go in there and they'll set that up for you. Now, the thing about doing that kind of investing is in the shorter term over the next several years, you know, if the stock market goes down, you'll potentially in the short term show that you've lost money, but it's not real money until you sell. But if it's money you're talking about leaving alone for 8 to 10 years till you're done with school, that's a great time period for you to look at putting money in there, and you can add to it over time.
Mm.
Now, the only bad side of any of this, I should tell you, is that if you're going to go to college and apply for help, for financial aid with college, this money counts against you for that.
Okay.
I can't tell you how excited I am that at your age, you're doing this. And the reason I specifically mentioned Fidelity is that they have these choices with no cost, and they have actual real offices you can go into and sit down with someone and have an account there and have somebody you can talk to there. And so it's a great way for you to learn and learn more by having the place you can go and having the actual account.
So I should go to Fidelity and open one of the mutual funds?
No, I want you to open the Fidelity Zero Index Funds is what they're called. Fidelity Zero. And they'll, when you walk in an office, they'll have signs everywhere for Fidelity Zero.
Yeah.
So you just tell them that's what you want. And I want to say to you, I don't know if this came from inside you or if this has come from your parents or wherever, where you are so into saving and then the idea of investing at 14 years old. But I, for one, am really proud of you. Connie's with us on the Clark Howard Show. And Connie, we just heard from a 14-year-old just moments ago who's already a big-time saver. You are into saving, and you want to bag work at what age?
At age 47 and 50 for my husband.
Wow. Well, how can I help? Because that puts you in a category called extreme saving and being able to call your own shots at an age that other people are going to be going to work for perhaps another 20 years.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for answering my question.
Sure.
My husband and I would like to retire in the next 16 years. I'm 31. He's 34. We've been contributing to our 401ks and maxing out our IRA accounts. We are looking into finding some supplemental income between the age of 50 and 59 and a half that we can use. And we were introduced to a whole life insurance policy option. And
that was your money blowing to smithereens. So the only time you would ever consider life insurance as a financial planning tool for what we're discussing is if you and your husband combined have an annual income in excess of somewhere around $400,000.
Okay. Oh, wow.
It's really only a reasonable financial planning tool for people that are in the earning stratosphere.
Okay.
Otherwise, if let's go back to the 401ks. Are you each saving the max you can in the 401ks?
No, we aren't doing the max. We're matching. We're doing a little bit more than the matching.
Okay. I would say that your next dollar should go towards increasing the amount you're putting into the 401ks up to the max, so you have money growing tax-free. And do either of you have, well, tax-deferred, do either of you have the option at work of doing a Roth 401k?
My husband does. I don't.
All right, so he should do all-in Roth 401k and do it to the max. Because at retirement, you will have enormous options with the Roth money where your original contributions are available to you at any time, tax and penalty free, and only your earnings have to remain in the plan growing till age 59 and a half. You have a gap to that point. Mm-hmm. You can cover the gap with the money you're contributing to Roth's and let the earnings be what continues to grow through your 50s till you approach the point at which you're allowed to withdraw tax-free.
So could we withdraw from our Roth 401k, or is it just the Roth IRA?
So the Roth 401k, once your husband's not working there anymore, it can be rolled over into a Roth IRA, and then you have the privilege that I'm talking about.
Okay.
So insurance is so far down the list, it doesn't even make my list for almost anyone, a fraction of 1% of people using insurance as a way of funding a gap like that because of the high costs, high commissions, and all the gotchas in insurance. Putting more money into retirement accounts is where the action is. You're listening to The Clark Howard Show. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast of our show, I'd love it if you'd subscribe. Whatever your favorite podcast app is, we're pretty much there. And whether you love what you hear from me or hate it, take time to write a review. It's how we all learn from each other, is from those reviews.